Multi-tenancy in software engineering refers to the idea of placing multiple customers, clients, users, or tenants so that they share a single resource. A resource here could be a storage piece, a networking stack, an application, a database, really anything. And the goal of multi-tenancy is really maximizing profit and reducing cost and increase efficiency effectively. So if you have a piece of equipment or resource or networking, you want to sell this device, this service as a service to as many customers as you want as possible, such that you're effectively your cost doesn't change, but you increase your profit. But what you need to be careful here is those tenants should be completely isolated of each other. They should not see each other's data. They should not be aware of each other. They should not be influenced by each other. That means if I suddenly ran an app and my CPU took 100%, I should not take other tenants with me, right? So this should be completely isolated effectively. Right, so security is another very critical piece. That's why building a multi-tenant application is extremely, extremely difficult and hard to nail. But if you do, you have a cash goddamn cow at your disposal. So in this episode of the Back Engineering Show, we're going to discuss multi-tenancy in the entire stack of the software. We're going to go from SSDs up to the database level, a little bit up to networking stack. We're going to talk about application multi-tenancy, all that jazz coming up in the Back Engineering Show. Let's jump into it. Welcome to the Back Engineering Show with your host, Hussein Nasser. This is the show where we discuss the art and the craft of building software and cover recent news on backend technologies. If you enjoy the show, make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel and rate it on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. With that said, let's get on the show. Welcome to the Backend Engineering Show with your host, Hussein Nasser. And I really, really admire engineers who build an effective multi-tenant application. And not only that, build infrastructures with multi-tenancy in place, right? So I'm going to divide this show into multiple portions. For those listening and watching on YouTube, there will be timestamp. I believe I put the timestamp for the show notes in the podcast, wherever you're listening on Google Podcasts or Spotify or Apple. You can see those timestamp where you can jump into the interesting portion of the podcast, of the show. But I'll start with really SSDs, the hard drive, the storage. If I'm a company and I want to build an app, and I want to sell storage. That's my only job. I want to build a cloud service that sells storage, nothing else. So I have one SSD, 2 tera, 4, 5, 8 terabytes, and I want to sell that SSD. I want to sell that storage. Well, the easiest way is just, hey, this SSD cost me, I don't know, $4,000. Hey, customer, pay me $6,000 and it's yours. You know, that's one way to do it, right? So you keep some margin to yourself. But what can you do here is, what if that SSD is effectively broken into 8 different logical SSDs, right? And then sold as 1 terabyte cost. You can make much, much more money by just doing that. And there is a feature in the SSDs, I believe specifically in the NVMe spec, that is called namespaces. I'm pretty sure this exists in prior hard drives. but I know that it exists in SSDs. So you create a namespace, right, for each of your clients. And even the operating system, when you actually boot up, if you assign this operating system just the namespace, it doesn't even know that there is another 7 terabytes to this SSD. It doesn't know. It's completely isolated. It's at the driver level. So it's not, it's very different from the operating system seeing the 8 gig and then deciding to partition at the OS level to take 1 terabyte to create a logical partition. No, it's completely different. So if you spin up a VM in your cloud provider and you point to this SSD, there is no option to change that. You can get from 0 up to 1 terabyte. You don't even see the other 7 terabytes. And that is a very powerful feature in the SSD NVMe spec specifically. This is kind of a concept of multi-tenancy, right? This is the concept of multi-tenancy at the lowest level that I can think of, right? At the storage level. And people now in the NVMe spec are working even to make this even better, where they work, we're working on making these namespaces called zoned namespaces, where you can be allocated erase units and you can write as an application in these big, large sequential units. So effectively, the performance of your application can be tuned based on your workload, right? Compared to the old model, the non-zoned model, where you have, everything is random effectively, right? You have no idea of the mapping. If you write to a block, this block could reside on this physical block on the SSD, but if you write it again, it will be completely another block on the back end on the same namespace, obviously. It's not going to jump into another namespace. That's the job of the driver and the SSD level. But effectively, the mapping becomes much, much more efficient with zoned namespaces, but that's outside the scope of this video. All right, so that's one part of the multi-tenancy. Let's jump slightly higher. Let's go to databases. I believe Oracle started this. I could be wrong, but in my personal experience, I've seen this personally with Oracle. Maybe 10, 9 years ago, I'm not sure. But this is the first instance where I saw a multi-tenant database. So Oracle, you can purchase a license, okay, hey, I want my Oracle instance to support multi-tenancy. And when you do that, you get the ability to create something called a container database. And a container database, you can create as many child databases as you want. And here's the beauty of this. These databases are not, you might say, Hussein, I can create multiple databases in any of them. No. Let's be very careful about this. Yeah, of course, you can create 7 databases in Mongo and Postgres, but this is different. These databases in Oracle, this might have changed, obviously, with the new releases with other databases, but with at that particular time, when you create a database, a pluggable child database called a pluggable database, these are completely isolated. You can specify the memory, can specify how much CPU this kind of thing use. You can specify all these parameters, storage, table spaces. It has its own word. Effectively, it's completely isolated. Obviously, this is not a new novel idea. I believe other databases started to do this. It started to give you this fine level tuning. And the moment you start doing that, you can effectively, as a company or as an engineer, you can sell your services. So you can spin up a Postgres instance or any database. I don't know if Postgres supports this low level tuning. I might be wrong. But you can, hey, you want a database? Pay me $3 a month and I'm give you this database. How much you want? Hey, I'm going to give you 1 GB RAM or whatever. So very easily you can sell And we see this pattern in cloud, right? That's why cloud services makes tons of money with multi-tenancy concept, right? So it's just a single instance that costs them literally nothing, right? But then they even break it more down and tune it at the IaaS level, so infrastructure as a service, and then sell you these different services, right? Some people might think this is scummy. I don't know about that, but I like the technology behind it. So we engineers talk about the technology, the marketing, the oversell concepts of things. You can debate, obviously, but as an idea, I love how this is built. How is it architecture? That's what I'm admiring here. I'm not necessarily admiring people who sell these services that cost them nothing and sell them for thousands and thousands of dollars. I'm not necessarily admiring that. Just to get my point across. So yeah, that's how we talked about storage, talked about databases, right? How databases can be multi-tenant, right? Support multi-tenancy. Let's talk about networking. Networking this is a very, very new concept, especially to me, right? When you have a network, what do you have? You have a bunch of switches. You have 10 gigabit, maybe Ethernet communication between them, and you have badass switches and routers, and you can build this infrastructure, and everything can connect to everything. But then, if you can sell this infrastructure to one customer, but that would be very expensive, right? For one customer to pay. So what do? You do something called software-defined networking. It's SDNs. It's a very flashy new term now, being used all the time. So SDNs is effectively software that runs and manages this network and kind of segregates this management of the network. So if a packet goes through a switch, it can be controlled by this software. So you effectively creating a virtual layer of networking on top of your physical network, and you can create as many virtual networks as you want. And the virtual network will have the idea of understanding what network can connect to what. And you can create virtual bridges, switches, because it's easy, right? It's all software at the end of the day. But the cost here is really, how do you nail that software-defined layer so that it doesn't really take your infrastructure down when it's down? Because software needs a place to run, and what happened if that place that is running on got down, right? Or what happened if there was a bug in that particular software? So security here is really critical, just like the databases, just like the storage, SSD. Security is very, 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 very critical, right? You don't want a packet be seen by someone else. I believe, I never worked in a cloud environment before, but I believe for cloud provider like Amazon and others, they must be doing something like that. They cannot afford every new registered customer to create a physical new network for them. They have to be to virtualize these networks, right? And people who work with AWS and all that stuff, let me know in the comment section. I don't use cloud services as much as I should, really. I should really understand these, how this work, but I have kind of an idea. So they must be using this virtual network. So this is another concept of multi-tenancy. So with the cloud, the burst of a cloud, you can see this buzzword multi-tenancy comes in the picture, because building a multi-tenant SSD, a multi-tenant database, a multi-tenant network is extremely difficult, right? Very, very difficult. Just how do you get this right? How do you know if something went wrong? It's just the most important thing is, what if, I believe we saw this with Slack outage. I'm going to reference my video coverage of the Slack outage back in 2021. Was it 2020 or 21? I don't remember. But the idea was basically Slack, I think there was an outage. Some of their instances went down, and then when it got back up, the amount of the network saturation reached the maximum, and effectively the allocated storage for the network allocated for Slack from Amazon was not enough. So they reached their maximum. So effectively, every time you got network saturated 100%, you get drop packets. As a result, your request to any backend will fail, which will lead to two things. Either the client will decide to give up and fail and cache the fact that the instance that I tried to connect to is failing unhealthy, which will lead to a cascading downstream event that says, this backend instance is just bad. I'm going to stop. I'm not going to connect to it, right? So which will lead effectively to, even if that backend becomes available, well, the backend was never down to begin with. The network bandwidth to the backend was unavailable effectively, right? So even if the network become good again, the client still cache the fact that the backend is unhealthy. And this is happening all the time with load balancers. You know, load balancers always mark stuff unhealthy. That's why my favorite, just this feature for Envoy, and I believe really, I know I'm going all over the place, but it's related. We're going to come back to multi-tenancy. One of the features that in load balancers and proxies in general, in Envoy in particular, that I really wish other proxies just start to adopt is, I don't remember what is it called, but effectively it's forcing sending requests to unhealthy instances. So when you mark something as unhealthy, the load balancer respects that and says, it's unhealthy, I'm not going to send a request to it. But Envoy can be configured to ignore that. It says, hey, it's unhealthy, but let's try again. Let's give it another taste. Maybe something went wrong. And this feature is very powerful. It saved Envoy from many outages. All right. So back to our point, right? So if that Amazon multi-tenancy network worked perfectly in that point, because if that network saturation actually reached 100% and leaked all the way to the network, someone else, let's say Netflix, who uses Amazon, who happened to be maybe in the same cable as Slack, Slack's pipes and Slack's network, might have been affected. But no, you need to maintain multi-tenancy. This should never affect any other things, right? So I cannot read other content from other tenants, and I should not be affected by other tenants, right? So that's the networking stack. We talked about SSD, talked about database, talked about networking. The next thing is really the easiest thing. VMs and containers, I'm going to lump them into the same place. Effectively, the best example for this is basically EC2. Which is the Amazon thingy that to spin up VMs, right? If I spin a VM and you spin up a VM, we are two different customers spinning two VMs. Our VMs might end up in the same physical machine. Do you know? You don't know. It's Amazon's job, right, to not allow me to know that your VM is the same physical machine. And I believe there was a bug at one point where actually there was some awareness of VMs. It was a very big deal at that point, right? And I don't need, I shouldn't be aware that your VM is in the same physical machine. And if I increase the resources, if I had a runaway process that took my CPU, you should be completely fine as a VM. Yeah. The same thing exactly applies to containers. We saw this definitely with containers. Containers to container security is a very, very important concept. People really just educating and taking PhDs really in container security, right? How can my container, first of all, doesn't leak stuff? Because containers is really a lightweight process, if you think about it, right? It's a C-named, right? Is it C-named? I believe it's called control group. C name is the DNS thing. C grouped, right? It's a control group by itself, right? So it doesn't see anything. It's very similar, right? So that's another example. Container is really an example of multi-tenancy, but at the operating system level. Hey, there's a free one. So containers. I didn't really think that through, but yeah, containers, VMs really are both concept of multi-tenancy, right? And then finally, which is basically most of you are aware of is multi-tenant application. So you're building an application that happens to be multi-tenant. And thousands of examples are like that, right? So Shopify is a single app, logical app, but many customers, right, use the same app. So we have multiple tenants living. They have their own storage. They have their own network. They have their own data. They have their own memory, CPU. All of this, you can argue that if they might be even shared, right? We don't know the backend, right? What is exactly happening? And that's where the part of the security comes in. A true multi-tenant application should be completely isolated. Some people kind of, when you build a multi-tenant app, they break that rule. They allow two processes or even one process to serve multiple requests from multiple customers. While this is kind of breaks the rule of multi-tenancy, it is kind of dangerous, right? Because that request, let's say you serve a request from this machine, right, from this client to pull some data and pull it in, and it's in memory, right? And another request came to the same instance, to the same web server process, and it processed that. Technically, it's overlap, right? So it's not really multi-tenant. You can call it multi-tenancy, but if there was a leak somehow, Heart to Bleed isn't a good example, right? With the OpenSSL. And I was able to read the memory, which is something you shouldn't be able to do, right? Then this breaks the basically number one rule of multi-tenancy. So building multi-tenant application is, how can you build this so that one user can use these services? I believe most websites have this concept of multi-tenancy, right? If you want to call it that. A lot of applications, a lot of users using the same service, the same infrastructure, and that's where you really can kind of abide by the rules. You can be in your own lane, put every customer its own named space, SSD. You can put them in an isolated database. You can use dedicated network storage if you want. You can use their own VM or containers, and then you effectively cut a whole slice just for them, right? But we know most applications can't afford to do it this way, right? Because you know, you have to do it really right across the entire stack. That's how you do it right, so that nobody can see each other. But most of the apps that are built, they're going to put two customers on the same table. Again, nothing wrong with that. You can call it multi-tenancy if you want, right? But if I send the wrong SQL and there was a bug on your software that allows me to inject some more SQL, and pulled some customers' data that I'm not supposed to pull, then that's not multi-tenancy, is it? No, right? A true multi-tenancy should be completely isolated. Then, but you might argue that, hey, a bug could exist in everyone, right? Yeah, a bug could exist in any of part of the stack, but how can you minimize that impact as much as possible? Again, at the end of the day, guys, I don't want to put like strong definitions. I don't like the definition game, to be honest. It's just thinking about how it's like a spectrum, right? It's like a slider. It's like how multi-tenants you want to get. You want to get strict multi-tenants. To me, a strict multi-tenancy is when a user registered in your app, they get their own namespace in the SSD. They get their own isolated networks stack. They get their own VM or containers, set of containers, and which sits on top of the network, which sits on top of their namespace. And they get their own, effectively, the application part. So they're effectively their own database instance almost, right? Or at least their own container database, right? So if you can do that, then that's the strict multi-tenancy. Obviously, that's very hard to achieve, economically speaking, and even practically speaking. So you can go into the hybrid model where, I'm going to put my customers in the same table or the same database or even more in the same table. Yeah, let them share. I have a key identifying each customer, right? And this is actually great for reporting as a whole. If you have multiple customers and you want to report, oh, who's your most expensive or most profiting customer? You can quickly do that if they are in the same database. But if they are not, then you cannot do that, right? So there is like kind of, drawbacks to multi-tenancy. You cannot really do analytical operations as effectively as if it was. What's the opposite of multi-tenancy? Shared tenants, you know, bunkers. I don't know. All right, guys, let's keep it short and sweet. I'm going to see you on the next one. Thank you so much for listening and watching. And a quick plug. We talked about databases here in this show. And if you want to learn the fundamentals of database engineering, make sure to grab my course, Fundamentals of Database Engineering. Head to database.husseinnasser.com for a discount coupon. And gonna see you on the next one. You guys stay awesome. Goodbye.